ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
श्रीशुक उवाच इत्याश इत्यादि श्यामरागणान् प्रजापतिपतिर्विभु अश्वास्य च महीम गिर्भी सुधाम परमं जयो। शुकदेव गोस्वामी कंटिन्यूड। After thus advising the demigods and pacifying Mother Earth, the very powerful Lord Brahma, who is the master of all other Prajapatis, and is therefore known as Prajapati Pati, returned to his own abode, Brahmaloka. Shurasheno Jadupatir Maturam Abasham Purim Maturam Shurasenam Cha Vishayan Bhubuje Pura. Formerly, Shurasena, the chief of the Yadu dynasty, had gone to live in the city of Mathura. There he enjoyed the places known as Mathura and Surasena.
Rajadhani tata sabhut sarva jadava bhuvajon Mathura bhagavan yatra nityam sanahito hari.
Since that time, the city of Mathura had been the capital of all the kings of the Yadu dynasty. The city and district of Mathura are very intimately connected with Krishna, for Lord Krishna lives there eternally. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It is understood that Mathura city is the transcendental abode of the Lord Krishna. It is not an ordinary material city, for it is eternally connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vrindavan is within the jurisdiction of Mathura, and it still continues to exist. Because Mathura and Vrindavan are intimately connected with Krishna eternally, it is said that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Vrindavanam parityajya padam ekam nagacchati. At present, the place known as Vrindavan in the district of Mathura continues its position as a transcendental place, and certainly anyone who goes there becomes transcendentally purified. Navadvip Dham is also intimately connected with Brajabhumi. Srila Narottam Das Thakur therefore says, Sri Gora Mandala Bhumi Jeba Jena Chintamani Tharahoi Brajabhumi Vas. Brajabhumi refers to Mathura Vrindavan, and Gora Mandala Bhumi includes Navadvip. These two places are non-different. Therefore, anyone living in Navadvip Dham, knowing Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be the same personality, lives in Brajabhumi, Mathura, Vrindavan. The Lord has made it convenient for the conditioned soul to live in Mathura and Vrindavan and Navadvip, and thus be directly connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Simply by living in these places, one can immediately come in contact with the Lord. There are many devotees who vow never to leave Vrindavan and Mathura. This is undoubtedly a good vow. But if one leaves Vrindavan, Mathura, or Navadvip Dham for the service of the Lord, he is not disconnected from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At any rate, we must understand the transcendental importance of Mathura, Vrindavan, and Navadvip Dham. Anyone who executes devotional service in these places certainly goes back home, back to Godhead, after giving up his body. Thus the words, Mathura Bhagavan Yatra Nityam Sanihito Hari, are particularly important. A devotee should fully utilize this instruction to the best of his ability. Whenever the Supreme Lord personally appears, he appears in Mathura because it is his intimate connection with this place. Therefore, although Mathura and Vrindavan are situated on this planet Earth, they are the transcendental abodes of the Lord.
Om Agyan Timidandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmoy Sri Guru Venamaha.
Since that time, the city of Mathura has been the capital of all the kings of the Yadu dynasty. The city and district of Mathura are very intimately connected with Krishna, for Lord Krishna lives there eternally.
Srila Shukadeva Goswami
herein explains the glory of the holy Dham, Mathura, Vrindavan. That city and district which are very intimately connected with Krishna, for Lord Krishna lives there eternally. Nitya Dham. The Lord's abode is eternal. And obviously, Srila Shukadeva Goswami is explaining something that an ordinary materialist cannot see with his mundane eyes simply by taking a train or a rickshaw to the holy place of Mathura and Vrindavan as we know it in Uttar Pradesh. It is a fact that this place of pilgrimage is the very tract of land in which Lord Sri Krishna is eternally residing. The place where he advented on this earth. But Krishna reveals himself according to our consciousness, according to the purity of our heart. It is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami that in every universe there is a Mathura and Vrindavan and Dwarka. And in each and every one of these universes, Krishna displays his divine lila. And therefore, each and every one of his lilas is always going on somewhere. Nitya lila, nitya dham. That means that these pastimes of the Lord are not only eternally being enacted in the spiritual world, but each one is constantly or eternally being enacted somewhere within the creation. When Lord Sri Krishna is born in the Mathura of this universe, as soon as that pastime is complete, he is being born in another universe. And as soon as that pastime is complete, he is being born in another universe. When Lord Sri Krishna steals the butter from Mother Yashoda and is bound by rope to a grinding mortar, and then he pulls that grinding mortar between the twin Arjuna trees, and they break, and Nala Kuvera and Manigriva come out, and they offer prayers of love to this baby child, Sri Damodar. As soon as that pastime is complete, how is it complete? All the cowherd boys, or cowherd men and elderly gopis, when they hear the crashing down of these two very, very large trees, they become very worried for Krishna. What is it? Here our child, this baby Krishna, he's sitting between these two trees after crawling, and they both cracked and fell down, and they became very worried, and they began to chant all mantras to protect him. But a few of the other children explained, "No, no, no, we saw Krishna crawled and dragged the grinding mortar, and he's the one that pulled down these trees. And after that, two beautiful, beautiful celestial personalities came to offer prayers to him." And the cowherd men and cowherd ladies, they could not believe that Krishna could be such an exalted person, that the demigods are coming to pray. After all, he's only our baby child. Yoga Maya. Krishna did not want them to understand his exalted position. Krishna wanted them to simply love him as a beautiful child. So as soon as that pastime was complete, immediately in another universe, Krishna is stealing butter. And then when the mighty demoness Putana came and Krishna sucked the life from her body, after she was dead and Mother Yashoda began to enact so many purificatory rituals to protect the child Krishna, again Putana appeared in another universe somewhere in this creation to be killed by Krishna. And when Krishna was also just a baby child, it was around his first birthday. Mother Yashoda was greeting all guests, and Krishna was becoming very heavy in her arms. So she put him down underneath a cart. This cart was being used to hold various types of heavy pots and so forth. And little did she know, but there was a demon who took the form of this cart especially to fall on Krishna and kill him. Nobody could understand how a demon could come in an inanimate object like a cart. But Krishna knows everything. But he did not reveal it in an ordinary way. He simply, in the premise of feeling separation from his mother, he began to kick his legs. And one of his legs happened to kick the wheel of the cart. And the force of that kick was so great that it destroyed the life of this demon. And the car came crashing to the ground. And it made a great tumultuous sound. And at that time, again, the gopas, the gopis, they came in a very worried state. What can we do? There's always these calamities that just miss from killing our beloved child. Our pious actions and our protection of the cows must have given us grace in the eyes of God that he keeps constantly again and again protecting the beloved Lord of our life, not Lord, the beloved child of our hearts, Sri Krishna. And of course, as soon as that cart demon is killed in this universe, instantly he appears in another universe somewhere to be killed by Krishna. So Kaviraj Goswami explains that Nitya Lila, even in this material world, Krishna is always adventing somewhere, and each one of his pastimes is always being enacted in one of these places within the material world. And of course, in the spiritual world, as we have read this morning and sung in the Damodarastakam prayers, his childhood pastimes as a baby, they are especially manifested when he appears in this material world. Because in Goloka Vrindavan, he is Nitya Kishore. He is eternally a youth playing upon his flute and having his celebrated Leela with Sri Radharani and the Sakis, Manjaris and Gopis and the cowherd boys. So this pastime of his very small infancy or childhood is the special revealing of an intimate pastime that can only be witnessed in this material creation. And in this way, the Gokul Vrindavan, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that the spiritual world beyond this material world is called Goloka. And when that Goloka descends to this material world, it is called Gokula. But there is no difference. There is a slight difference in that the Gokula of this world is a type of training ground for people who are purified devotees to bring them to the level of intensified love so that they could enter into the spiritual world of Goloka. In Goloka Vrindavan, the Nitya Siddha devotees who are never conditioned by material life or material desires, they descend, many of them, with Krishna, simply to assist in his lila. How wonderful it is that when Krishna incarnates, he does not come alone. Srila Prabhupada explains that just as a king, when he goes somewhere, he doesn't just go alone. He takes an entourage with him. He takes the palanquins, the royal insignias, his intimate ministers, his bodyguards. Krishna is Rasaraj. He is the king of Ras. He's the king of the entire creation. When he comes to this world, he does not come alone. But he brings his abode with him. He brings the eternal land of Brajabhumi along with him. But unlike the kings of this world, he could remain as he is in the spiritual world. But through the process of expansion, he could come, and through the process of expansion, his intimate associates, his cows, cowherd boys, cowherd men, gopis, the river Jamuna, they all expand themselves from Goloka and appear in all of the universes throughout the creation. Now this is very important to understand because within each universe there is an earth planet. And as I was explaining, quoting Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, Krishna's lila, each one is being enacted somewhere in this creation. And of course we know that Krishna only appears once in every day of Brahma. That means once every so many billions of years. The fact that he only appeared 5,000 years ago, we are very fortunate. It is very recent. In fact, for a mundane historian, this is a long time. This is practically before man was civilized. According to many anthropologists, man was just coming out of his caveman states 5,000 years ago. But according to those who are on the eternal platform of consciousness, it is different. When Srila Prabhupada would speak about Krishna, he would just, in a very simple, innocent and straightforward way, due to his eternal perception of existence, he would say, and just recently, when Krishna appeared, only 5,000 years ago. So Krishna appears once every day of Brahma in each universe. And yet, somewhere, in some universe, each one of his lila is going on. That means in thousands of universes, simultaneously Krishna's pastimes is going on. within this material creation. And in each one, he only appears at the most once in a day of Brahma. So it gives you some understanding of how many universes there must be. Quadrillions of universes and more. Countless universes emanating from the body of Mahavishnu. And we're living in just one little universe. And in this universe, we're living in just one little planet called Earth. And on this planet Earth, we're so minute in our ability to perceive that we can we're just thinking ourselves so wonderful and great because we can, through a telescope that we have created, we can see the pod marks on the moon. And whether they went or not, very proud that we have gone to the moon, which is the absolute nearest planet, according to modern science, to this Earth. But when we consider the countless universes all around us and the extent of the size of this universe that we cannot even imagine what's beyond our microscopes and telescopes, Krishna is larger than the largest, smaller than the smallest. He's existing in his universal form as the all of the universes within this creation are just various aspects of his gigantic body of Mahavishnu. How great he is. And at the same time, he's smaller than the smallest. Mahato Mahayan Anato Aniyan. That we look in the most high-powered microscope and we see molecules, perhaps atoms. We can't really see the electrons and neutrons, but we understand by the symptoms of what's going on in the atoms that they must be there. But billions of times smaller than the electron and neutron is Krishna, who's personally residing within, in and between every atom. When we see something very big, we think it's great. And when we see something very small, we think it's great. Huh? Just like in America, if you go to Chicago, you will see the Sears Tower, the largest building in all the world. And people from all over the world go there just to look at it and think, oh, how great. Because it's big. Or people take journeys to the Himalayas to look at these giant mountains and think, oh, how great. And at the same time, the Japanese, right now, economically, they're the most famous people in the world. Why? Because they could take something electronic and make it very small. When you see some computer that fits within the palm of your hand and it could do all the functions of these big computers that used to take the size of this room, people think, oh, how great. So if someone can create something big like the Sears Tower, they're considered great. And if they can build something very small like a pocket computer, this is also great. That is why it is said, Mahato Aniyan Anato Iniyan. So give people an understanding of how great God is. He is larger than the largest and smaller than the smallest. In the size of a mosquito, and one portion of the size of the mosquito is called a gnat. They're just like those little dots that just fly around. Fruit flies, you have seen. Very small. But such a machine. A fruit fly. You can hardly see it. But it has a brain. It has wings. It has legs. It has eyes. It has ears. It flies around. It eats. It sleeps. It has sex life. It has all the organs for sex life. And then the female produces a little baby gnat. Could you imagine the size of the baby gnat? And then that babe baby Nat is performing all childhood pastimes. In this way, Krishna has created the smallest of the small. But even more wondrous than that is he personally himself is living within the heart of that gnat to give it direction according to its previous karma and everything. He's directing it, giving it intelligence, how to fly. The gnat doesn't go to, aerodynamic schools to get pilot's license. They just naturally know how to fly. Where do they get that information from? From the Paramatma. Krishna's just directing him. This is how you flap your wings. This is how you land. This is how you take off. Like that. And they do it. He's the air traffic controller within the heart of the gnat. And he's within the heart, so small, so tiny, we can't even see the gnat, let to speak of the person who's directing it. This is the greatness of Krishna. He can be Mahavishnu, from whom is so great that quadrillions and quadrillions, unlimited numbers of universes are emanating from the pores of his body. Mahato Mahiyan, greater than the greatest. And he is also the super soul, the Paramatma, giving direction to the tiniest Indragopa insect. This is the greatness of Krishna. So when Krishna descends in this world, he doesn't have to be like us. Just like this morning Hridayananda Prabhu was with us. He is a very important man in business. But he has problems sometimes, because when he's at the temple, which he likes to be at the temple always, but when he's at the temple, and all of his managers and everything, they're wondering, where is he? We need him. There's a meeting. Like last night, he called, I want to come to the program, but I have a meeting. I cannot come. And he's a great man of this world. But Krishna doesn't have that problem. If he wants to come, he just expands himself and attends the meeting. And he comes to Vasai and dances and chants with his devotees. So there's a difference. Human beings cannot do this. So when Krishna descends on this world, Goloka Vrindavan remains just as it is, but that same Goloka Vrindavan also appears 90 miles southeast of Delhi. And when Lord Sri Krishna brings Sri Radharani and her brother Sridhama and Stoka Krishna and Subal and the eight Sakis headed by Lalita, Vishaka, Chitra, they all come down to play with Krishna in so many wonderful ways to give pleasure to him. But at the same time, they are all remaining within Goloka, as if there's no strain. They're not thinking of time schedules. I have to be here, I have to be there. Wherever they want to be, they're there, and everywhere else. That is the spiritual world. In the material world also, though, for those souls who are sadhan siddha, see, there are three types of souls. Nitya Siddha, Sadhan Siddha, and Nitya Bandha. There are those that are bound to the conditioned state of consciousness. Those who have forgotten Krishna because of their rebellion. They want to enjoy the property of Krishna. They want sense gratification. Therefore, they are simply in the prison of their own desires. And such souls are called eternally conditioned. But by the grace of Krishna, he intervenes by descending to this world, by speaking through scripture, by enacting his divine mercy through the sadhus, the holy people. to attract these conditioned souls back to him. And when they are attracted in the association of devotees, they take to the process of devotional service, sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti is divided into two categories, vaidhi bhakti, which means under strict rules and regulations, we may have no taste, we may have no spontaneous desire to rise for Mangalarti, to chant the holy names, to follow the four regulative principles, to engage our hard-earned energies in Krishna service. But we do it because with our intelligence we are convinced that this is the right thing. We must do it. Even if it's torturous, even if it's painful, I must do it. This is sadhana bhakti. And sadhana means at times it will be pleasurable and at times it will be terribly painful. This is the nature of the mind. It's accepting and rejecting. But a sadhana bhakta, due to keeping a strong discipline of regulation in his life, transcends gradually the whimsical nature of the mind. And through this process of becoming purified, by adhering to the order of the spiritual master, by taking shelter of the association of devotees, one gradually attains the level of Raganuga Bhakti. In that state, we have a spontaneous desire for Krishna. We have no more any consideration for the things of this world, for our own sense enjoyment. There's nothing we would rather do than taste the sweetness of the holy name. There's nothing we would rather do than dance and chant with the Vaishnavas. It's no longer a discipline or austerity. It is a spontaneous love. This is also considered part of sadhana, part of the training process. And by practicing in this method of Raganuga Bhakti for many years, one becomes further purified until he attains the higher states. Ruchi, firm faith, the higher taste, that is Raganuga Bhakti. Then one attains the level of bhava. Bhava means love of God. And from the process of bhava, as we continue to purify ourselves beyond that, in the process of devotional service, we come to the level of prema bhakti. And at that stage, we are given, after we leave this particular body, entrance into the Lord's lila. But we are not to go directly to Goloka. But we go to one of the places where Sri Krishna is manifesting his pastimes in this world, Gokula. And there we become an assistant or a servant of the particular divine Brajabasi who is of the same natural rasa that we have acquired a taste for. If you are cowherd man, you will be under the direction of Nanda Maharaj or one of his associates. If you are a gopi, you will be under the direction of one of the sakis or manjaris. In this way, if you are a cow, one of the cows of Gokula will train you how to eat nice grass and give milk for Krishna and everything like that. So in this way, they learn how to live in this loving relationship with Krishna. And then at the time when that particular universe, Krishna wraps up his pastimes, at that time Krishna personally comes and brings all the devotees back home, back to Goloka. That is his lila. In each universe, Dandavakra attacks Mathura. Krishna leaves Dwarka under this excuse. If he were to tell his queens, I'm going to Vrindavan, they would all die. Because they know how much Krishna loves Vrindavan and how much he loves the Brijbasis. And they know for sure if he goes back, he'll never come back to see us. So he has to secretly go. He arranges that Dandavakra happens to attack Mathura. The residents of Mathura are calling out, please Krishna, save us. He's going to destroy everything. And Krishna says, Balaram, you stay here, protect Dwarka, I will go alone. And he goes and he kills Dandavakra and then he goes to Vrindavan. And of course, the gopis and gopas, they're so happy after over 100 years of separation. They're just, it's such a grand reunion, and Krishna has wonderful leelas with them. And then he knows that I cannot leave them again. I can't do that to them. I've already left them in the ocean of separation for over 100 years. So at that time, he says, they have, in that separation, the nitya siddha devotees, they have tasted the unlimited, infinite ecstasy of separation from Krishna, and those sadhan siddha devotees, those devotees who have come up from other universes, who have attained the level through the purification of devotional service under a guru, who are now living as my gopis and gopas and grasses and cows, they, in this 100 years of separation, they have been totally, completely, super excellently purified of any trace of any material desires that could ever again come in their hearts. So now everyone's ready to go back to Goloka. And then Krishna personally escorts them through the airways back to Goloka Vrindavan, where everyone resumes their original constitutional relationship with Sri Krishna. And then Krishna thinks, but they're still waiting for me in Dwarka. So then he comes back and continues his pastime in Dwarka. So this Vrindavan that we sometimes go on pilgrimage, it is the same Vrindavan. And it is confirmed right here in the Srimad Bhagavatam by Shukadeva Goswami. It's not simply our sentiment. It's not just that we go to Vrindavan just to remember Krishna and just to sentimentally superimpose some idea that Krishna's here but we cannot see him. This is just some imagination. But according to the most authorized of all shastras, according to Vyasadeva and his beloved son Shukadeva, that Krishna lives there eternally. Nityam sanihito hari. Because Krishna, although physically, in a spiritual, physical way, there is a beginning and an end to his lila in Vrindavan. But Vrindavan, Krishna never leaves. That Vrindavan is still there, therefore all the leelas of Sri Krishna are still present in Vrindavan, but on another level, on a purely divinely spiritual level. And therefore, Vrindavan, for those who have eyes which are anointed with the salve of love, we can actually see Vrindavan as it is. And it is being described here, therefore, great, great holy men have gone to reside in this holy place since time immemorial. The supreme abode of the Lord revealed on this earth. So the question is, why in the world would a Vaishnava want to live anywhere else except Vrindavan? And Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport for our good fortune that the only reason a devotee would want to leave Vrindavan is for the service of the Lord. Because the Vrindavan spirit is that spirit of devotional service, where everyone is willing to do anything, go anywhere for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, that eternal Brajvasi who was living at Radha Damodar temple, which is really practically right on the site of the Raslila, Seva Kunj. Of course, we know the Raslila doesn't take place in one part of Vrindavan, but during Raslila, Krishna and gopis, they travel to many parts of Vrindavan. But there are special sections which the great acharyas have revealed where different aspects of Raslila take place. Like, for instance, there's Nidiban. That's during the Raslila. After playing in so many ways, Krishna and Radharani go into a bed, a beautiful bed made out of leaves and flowers by the Sakis, and there they rest, and everyone sings to them and fans them and everything like that in the moonlight. And then they, after taking some rest, again they begin to dance. And Seva Kunj. Seva Kunj is considered one of the very most highly worshipped aspects of Raslila. That is where the aarti of Radha and Krishna take place during the moonlit nights. And also, at that time, Krishna massages the lotus feet of Sri Radharani, offering seva to her in order to give her pleasure. And all of these sakis also give nice foodstuffs and everything of service to Radha and Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada was living right in this district of Seva Kunj of Brajadham. And he was such a devotee in the Paramhamsa stage that he could feel within his heart the divine presence of these wonderful pastimes, always. So why would he want to leave such a place to come to New York City? The leelas of New York City are something different. The Bowery, the Lower East Side, drunkards, drug addicts, prostitutes, murderers, rapists, terrible pollution everywhere, constant flow of cars honking their horns, everyone just passionately running for money, 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 money. Terrible music blaring out of every window, glorifying sex life, drugs. It's a different rasa altogether than living in Seva Kunj. But Srila Prabhupada, because he left for the sake of service, service to his guru and service to Krishna, his heart was never outside of Vrindavan. By the arrangement of Sri Krishna, Vrindavan is wherever his devotee goes. In fact, Sri Advaita Acharya said this about Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya, after he took sannyas, you know, he was on his way to Vrindavan. He had not been there at that time, physically. You can imagine, Krishna appeared after 4,500 years. He appeared again on this earth in the mood of Radharani, a devotee, who simply wanted to go to Vrindavan. And after 24 years, he took sannyas and he was thinking, now my wife's gone, my mother's gone, all my worldly responsibilities are gone, I'm just going to Vrindavan. And he was on his way. But Lord Nityananda, who was the original spiritual master, he, feeling compassion upon all the fallen souls of this world, understood that if Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu simply goes to Vrindavan and absorbs himself in the Leela, then the whole purpose of his incarnation, as far as the external purpose of delivering the conditioned souls and establishing the truth of Sanatan Dharma through Nam Sankirtan, it'll never happen. So to assist the Lord in his Leela, Lord Balaram, appearing as Nityananda, tricked him. And he told some cowherd men in the land of Radhadesh that when this sannyasi asks you where Vrindavan is, you point the opposite way. Show him the way to the Ganges. So they did. So when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the river Ganges near Santipur, he thought, this is the Jamuna. I've arrived in Vrindavan already. This is wonderful. And he just went in ecstasy. Jamuna ki jai. And he started bathing. And then Advaitacharya came on boat. He was given a message to come meet us. Bring some dry cloth for Mahaprabhu to change into. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw Sri Advaita from Santipur on a boat, he said, Advaita, how did you come to Vrindavan so fast? How did you know I was here? Advaita, he didn't understand what was going on. He said, this is Santipur, this is the Ganges. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understood that Lord Nityananda has tricked me. He said, you have tricked me. He's externally angry, internally pleased, but externally angry. And then when Advaita, he could understand the mercy of Lord Nityananda. So in order to defend him, he says, no, no, my Lord, actually you are in Vrindavan. And he explained it two ways. He said, first of all, when the Ganges meets the Jamuna at Prayag, at that point, it's called the Ganges. But in reality, one side, the eastern side, is Ganga, and the western side is Jamuna. And you are bathing on the western side, so actually Lord Nityananda was not lying. You are factually bathing in the Jamuna. And as far as Vrindavan, he said, wherever your lotus feet are, that is Vrindavan. That place becomes Vrindavan. Because it says in the Shastra, Vrindavanam bharitya japadamekam nagacchati, that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. And you're always chanting his holy name and remembering him. And Krishna is non-different than his name. So if you're chanting his name, and Krishna is present in his name, and he never leaves Vrindavan, therefore wherever you're chanting is Vrindavan. So actually, there's no problem. So Lord Chaitanya, hearing the beautiful prayers of his devotee, became very happy. So a devotee, even Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he went to Vrindavan later on, and he stayed for some months. But then, because of the calling in his heart to show compassion and mercy to the fallen souls of this world, but he did it for us. Because if he didn't, God knows our condition today, the world's condition. So the devotees of the Lord, their greatest desire, their greatest longing in life is not to enjoy Krishna, but to be enjoyed by Krishna. And how do we be enjoyed by Krishna? By serving Krishna. And the best way to serve Krishna is to assist him in his most intimate pastimes. And on this earth, his most intimate pastime is showing compassion to the fallen souls, bringing the persons in bondage closer to him. And in the holy places like Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwaraka, Ayodhya, Chitrakoot, most of the devotees, to some degree, are very, very close to Krishna. But what about the rest of India and the rest of the planet Earth, where everyone is simply wasting their precious human lives in disobedience to Krishna's will? Therefore, it is explained the most intimate service, the most confidential servitor of the Lord, is he who is willing to even leave the spiritual dham to assist Guru and Krishna in the mission of spreading love of God, Krishna consciousness. And therefore, such great souls as Srila Prabhupada, what an exalted position. Wherever their feet are, that is Vrindavan. And Srila Prabhupada came to the West, and he was in so much separation of Vrindavan, but at the same time so much immersed in his lila of preaching, of being a compassionate messenger of the Lord, that he wanted to establish new Vrindavan. And that was actually comparatively, you can imagine what an intimate project this was for Srila Prabhupada, to establish New Vrindavan. And Srila Prabhupada said that New Vrindavan is non-different than the Vrindavan of India. There is no difference. Because the Brijabasi spirit, where everyone is simply coming together to live a simple life for the glorification of Krishna, is there. And in this way, actually Srila Prabhupada said, in many ways New Vrindavan is better than Old Vrindavan, because at least to display the pastimes of Vrindavan to the world, we can create it in such a way where everything is directly Krishna conscious. Where in Old Vrindavan over the years, So many businessmen and everything else, at least externally, have come, and there are now big, big government oil refineries and everything else. Fortunately, at New Vrindavan, we don't have like that. So in many ways, we can protect it. But Vrindavan is always being attacked by these types of materialistic principles. And in order for New Vrindavan to truly have the recognition of being Vrindavan, it has to be attacked by demons sometimes. Otherwise, no one will take it seriously who understands the true philosophy of Krishna's Leela. And this is New Vrindavan East. Srila Prabhupada actually said like this, that the people of India are so much chasing after the West, the people of India don't want to go to Vrindavan, they want to go to New York City. They want to go to Washington, D.C., to Los Angeles. They want to go to Niagara Falls, Buffalo, New York. They're more interested in spending their hard-earned money to go to these places than to just take a train and go to Vrindavan. This is the lost condition of the subcontinent of India. So Srila Prabhupada explained that if we can make the West Krishna conscious and bring the Western Krishna conscious people and the Western Krishna conscious culture to India, then because everyone's chasing after the West, then they will perhaps take seriously their own spiritual heritage of Vrindavan. And this is the compassion and the vision of this great devotee of Lord Sri Krishna, Srila Prabhupada. So here, Shukadeva Goswami, in this most beautiful verse, is explaining the true glory of Vrindavan Dham. And therefore, when we go on these pilgrimages, it is not just something that we should think is for our sense gratification. To go in the association of devotees to these holy places for the purpose of purification is a very, very essential and important part of our spiritual development. In fact, Srila Rupa Goswami explained there are five most important principles of 64 that one must accept in devotional service. The first is to associate with devotees. The second is to chant the holy names of Krishna regularly. The third is to regularly hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. The fourth is to worship the Tulsi. And the fifth is to visit the holy places like Mathura and Vrindavan. To go for a spiritual recharging. But just to go by ourselves and visit some temples and walk around to see some holy places and have a professional guide tell us what's what has minimal value. But if one goes in the association of very, very sincere devotees who are going especially for the purification of their hearts, to meet the holy people, and so forth, then such yatras or pilgrimages have a profound effect of deepening our realizations of Krishna consciousness. And when we leave Vrindavan, if we're fortunate, when we go to Vrindavan, if we're fortunate, we'll experience the higher taste of Krishna's Leela and we'll never want to leave. But for the service of Krishna, we'll leave. And if we leave for that purpose, of the service of Krishna, the service of his mission, then actually in that mood, we're more in Vrindavan than even if we're there. Srila Prabhupada used to say, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, don't try to see Krishna, but serve Krishna in such a way that he wants to see you. And Vrindavan is non-different than Krishna, so it is the same principle. Don't simply try to go to Vrindavan to see Vrindavan, but try to serve Vrindavan in such a way that Vrindavan will reveal herself to you. Is there any questions? Yes.
Is it intellectual conviction or sense gratification that's an obstacle to our trying to surrender?
Intellectual conviction? it depends on what your intellectual conviction is. If your intellectual conviction is that I am the eternal servant of Krishna, then that is a great asset to the process of surrender. In fact, it is a necessary, preliminary asset for the surrender. That is why we come to class every day, to get an intellectual conviction of the way of life. But if we have intellectual conviction that I am this body and I am the enjoyer and to make a nice situation in this world is really the real goal of life and this Krishna consciousness is just something that I like to do on the side, that type of intellectual conviction certainly will be a barrier in your Krishna consciousness. What was the second?
Sense gratification.
Sense gratification. Again, the sense gratification. If you learn to find gratification in pleasing Krishna's senses, that is real sense gratification. Srila Prabhupada said that in Krishna consciousness, we're actually not against sense gratification. We're for sense gratification, but real sense gratification. By sacrificing the use of our senses in Krishna's service, our senses derive the ultimate spiritual experience of gratification. But when our senses want to enjoy apart from Krishna, that type of sense gratification simply diverts our consciousness away from the spiritual principle and merges it into the bondage of material condition of birth and death. Therefore, yes, this material sense gratification is the greatest opposition to the purification of consciousness. Yes?
You always said that Krishna is easily accessible right now than what he was 5,000 years ago. In the form of the world. That time when he was there, never people could not see him. And even now, he's easily accessible. Like, when we have some problem, like demons are attacking, like we have some just kidding, that's the problem. Is it like when you say, his holy name, like, it's easily accessible, you said it's easily accessible in the form of the world. What is it exactly?
Through sound vibration, how many people of this earth actually witness Krishna dancing on the hoods of Kaliya? Only his most intimate associates in Vrindavan. The rest of the earth, they weren't there. They were going on with their nonsense. Right? So Krishna, in the form of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, same Krishna, same Balaram, but in a more magnanimous manifestation. Magnanimous in the sense that Vrindavan was the spiritual world where the pleasures of spiritual ras was confined only to those residents of Brajadham. Krishna was not out preaching the glories of Vrindavan. He was simply enjoying in Vrindavan. Correct? But in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has, and his associates, they are going throughout all the lands teaching the whole world the glories of Vrindavan. Krishna himself has left Vrindavan to reveal Vrindavan to the entire world. Through the sound of the holy name. When we hear when Krishna was performing his lila in Vrindavan, he was establishing his lila for the world for all time to come. But only the Brijbasis saw it. But when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the other great acharyas, when they would travel and speak and deliver the Bhagavatam, Vrindavan is available to the world through the Srimad Bhagavatam, all these pastimes. The sound vibration is none different than Krishna. when we're reading the story of Krishna killing Kaliya, we're actually in Vrindavan. We're witnessing it. If we have the eyes to see it, as we're hearing the vibration in the pure heart, we'll actually have the direct experience and ecstatic love of witnessing that pastime through sound vibration. There's no difference. That's why Srila Prabhupada was so anxious that these books be distributed massively to give the whole world the opportunity to enter into the Leela of Vrindavan. And by chanting the holy name, we could actually realize the content of these great literatures, realize the Leela of Sri Krishna in our own life. So in this way, Krishna is in this age of Kali Yuga, through his name and through his devotees, he's incarnating himself more in a more magnanimous way than he did when he appeared directly 5,000 years back. Because he's broken all barriers and distributed the content of Vrindavan's love throughout all the world. Is there any other questions?
What's the definition of mind and intelligence, and how do we differentiate between them, like in devotional service, like is it a mind talking just now, is it an intelligence talk?
Unless you have a spiritual master, you cannot discriminate. Intelligence is, in spirituality, the word of Krishna. That faculty within us that is able to discriminate between Krishna's desire and the desire of my senses. The nature of the mind is sometimes it listens to Krishna, and sometimes it listens to its ego, false ego and senses. And we, as neophyte devotees, we cannot even differentiate between the voice of our false ego and the voice of Krishna. Therefore, we need someone who's actually hearing the voice of Krishna, who's repeating the words of the scripture, which is the voice of Krishna, to guide us. And when we take shelter of adhering to the voice of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, that is our intelligence. And when we act independent of the voice of Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, that is simply our conditioned mind. So it's very easy. If you simply accept the authority of advanced souls, there's no question of when my mind is going wild and when I'm using my good intelligence. But if you do not submit yourself humbly before the higher authority of Guru Sadhu Shastra, then factually it's always just guessing. Is this my mind? Is this? You never really know. How can you know? The mind is so tricky. Maya is so subtle. She can disguise her voice to sound just like Krishna's. And you'll never know unless there's someone who knows to guide you and tell you. Therefore, prani prasnena sevaya, we inquire submissively and render service. Even Arjuna, such a great person, his mind was going wild on that battlefield of Kurukshetra. I'm not going to fight this war. And he had so many good arguments. If I fight this war, then what is the use? How will I enjoy if all of our wealth is stained by the blood of our teacher, our grandfather, and our cousins, and those we love? So for this reason, it's not good. What to speak, that's for my own personal reasons. And as far as social reasons, all these soldiers are going to die. Their women are going to be unprotected. If women are unprotected, unscrupulous men are going to exploit them and make them unchaste. Then there's going to be unwanted population. And if there's unwanted population, the children will no longer follow any of the samskaras. They won't have any religious base to their life. And they'll perform all sinful activities. And then Sanatana Dharma will just be in total ruination all over the world. So I'm not going to fight this war. He convinced himself. That was his mind. And he thought it was a good thing. It seemed intelligent, but it was his mind. But then, how did he understand what was right? As long as he thought he knew what was right, Krishna didn't bother with him. But when he said, Shishasti Hamam, that now I am your disciple, you instruct me. Then Krishna spoke, told him, you're nonsense. So while speaking learned words, you're revealing yourself to be a fool. And then Krishna explained to him what is the truth. So if such a great personality as Arjuna, without the help of Guru, could not understand what is real and what is unreal, what is our position? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.